You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. And right now, I'm joined by none other than one of the voices for the Houston Rockets, Mr. Matt Thomas. How are you doing today, Matt?
Jackson, it's a pleasure to be on with you for the very first time.
Is this the first time you're on the show?
No. Ben would call me every other day.
Okay, there we go.
I would shoot him down most days, but today, when you called, I'm like, I cannot wait to jump in the studio fresh off my show and talk with you.
Well, you owed me for some strawberry cupcakes, right?
This is true, and I do need more of those cupcakes.
Okay, well, we'll be sure to get you hooked up further down the line.
Perfect.
Now, my very first question for you is, do you remember where you were? You were at the Rockets Twitter party, right, when the Westbrook trade news dropped?
I can give it to you in vivid detail.
Okay, well, I just want to know what, overall, what your immediate reaction to that trade was, how you thought it was going to work out, and how what your opinions are, and how it's worked out so far.
All right, so let's go back to the night of the trade. We're at the restaurant, the bar, and there's about 12 of us sitting around, and basically I said, hey, the leader of our group, Justin Think Tank or whatever his Twitter account is.
I can't remember his handle off the top
of
my head, but we
know
it's
one of those
Justin.
Long, convoluted with multiple letters. Sorry if I butchered your name, I apologize. Point being is this, he's like, we all in agreement that this Russ book rumors is ridiculous, right? And I'm like, I said, I'd be up for it. I just would. I said, I'm not judging. I'm always up for trades, by the way.
Okay.
Always to shake the apple cart. I'm okay with that. Because I kind of knew what Chris and James were going to be, and how things kind of fell apart. I knew that Chris's best days were behind him.
We knew what their ceiling was.
Right. If you give me Russ still in the prime of his NBA career, which I think he would be at 30 or 31, you put him with James, you put two guys that have been together since they were kids, I was looking forward to the possibility. So I, along with one other person, was like, yeah, we're up for this. Everybody's like, oh, no, this will be the worst thing ever. And then like 10 minutes later, the deal comes down. And we're all laughing our asses off because we're like, I can't believe we just discussed this 10 minutes ago. So fast forward to now, the Rockets are playing really good basketball, one of the best records in the NBA, largely, frankly, because of James playing superhuman basketball like he normally does. Russ has been okay. Hasn't been great from the floor. His free throw percentage has been good. I think he's been able to acquiesce to James on some things offensively. I still think he's still working through some things. So I will give you the glass half full option of, if the Rockets are playing 10-3 basketball without Russ being at 100%, missing two games because of back-to-back, imagine when he gets his mojo and he gets his full groove on, how good this basketball team could be.
Definitely, and a lot of the critics on social media have been kind of complaining that the Rockets' schedule thus far hasn't been that difficult, that they haven't faced too many upper echelon type opponents.
I'd agree with that.
But you've started this stretch of games now here in November where you've got about 8 games in a row against everybody you're playing has an above 500 record. Everybody is playing for a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, they're 3-0 in this stretch of games. They've beaten the Clippers. They've now beaten the Pacers and the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a few more games coming up that are going to be a great test, especially with this undermanned roster. Speaking of, how do you think that they've fared so far with this lack of rotation players?
It's pretty astonishing because of the fact that Eric Gordon won't be available to probably, I guess, January is what they're saying. Gerald Green's loss kind of hurts right now because that's a body you could plug and play for 15, 20 minutes if you needed to.
And it hurts on an emotional level, too.
It does. He just loves being a Houston Rocket, and there's just not enough of that in sports today. To get Chris Clemens involved when he frankly looks like a last player off the bench kind of guy, giving you major minutes. Isaiah Hartenstein took advantage of the most minutes he's ever played in an NBA game, I think, in one sitting in a relative performance in Minnesota. So he's taking advantage of it. I'm astonished. I really am that James can play as many minutes as he has, as successfully he has in terms of points, scoring, distribution, and really taking pretty good care of the basketball. His shooting percentage isn't great. It's below his career numbers. It's below the numbers of a year ago. But for what is being asked of him, he's doing everything and then some. And to me, that little mid-range floater that he is using with his left hand now from about 10, 11 feet is just about automatic. And if that is the case, that is going to open up a lot of different avenues for other guys. Because if that shot is contested and he feels that it is, he can kick it out to PJ in the corner or Tavo Cephalosha or anybody else that wants to shoot a corner three and make him on a much more of a regular basis. But right now, to me, he is literally unstoppable. The three-point shot is coming and going up and down a little bit. But by and large, I have been so impressed with how James has been able to fight through the different lineups, guys missing time, different lineup changes, different rotation players getting minutes. He's been magnificent.
And this isn't the first time that James has had to deal with a lineup that has faced a multitude of injuries. He dragged the Rockets to the second-best record in the mm-hmm. Western Conference back when Dwight Howard missed half of a season. His starting center was Demo for much of that stretch. And still able to do wonders with a set of point guards, Jason Terry and Pablo Prigioni, that were a combined 74 years old in age. So he is capable. The floor with James Harden is absolutely a 50-win team. That is what you will get out of James Harden, with the asterisk on that 1 year where the Rockets went 41-41.
And that's why the whole thing about Colin Cowherd saying the Rockets weren't going to make the playoffs was just a terrible, terrible troll job that just continues to lose credibility. I mean, James, as long as he's healthy, is going to will you to 50. Very few players in the NBA. LeBron, you can say that. You could have said that with Russ in his days in Oklahoma City, without Paul George. Durant went healthy. I don't know if you can say that about Kyrie Irving. We don't know at this point where that's going to be. But James in a very small category that by himself, just on an average night, is going to get you 50 wins.
Absolutely. And I do want to go on a quick tangent about that floater that James has added to his game. I think that it's such a huge element now as far as his offensive versatility, because he used to buy into that Daryl Morey threes, layups, and dunks mantra so much so that I think it made him a bit predictable as an offensive player. We saw when he first came to Houston, he had that mid-range step back that he did rely on a bit, and he slowly phased that out of his game.
Yep.
And as he worked the floater back into his game, he has now really become unguardable on the offensive end. But I had a bit of a reservation with the floater at first, and I shared this interaction with Michael Connor yesterday on Sunday's Clutch City Sunday. I have a bit of a reservation with the floater because I have still some PTSD from a past Rockets player who had a floater that seemingly never went in, and I want to know if you know who I'm talking about off the top of your head.
Floater that never went down. What years are we talking about?
Late 2000s.
Nope, can't help you.
Nobody? Nobody's coming to mind?
No.
Does not even if I say skip to my Lou?
Nope.
Rafer Alston?
I got to be brutally honest. I didn't live here in the town during that time.
Okay.
And so when the Rockets were 42-40, 44-38, I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention.
Okay. All right. That's perfectly
I'm going to save you the embarrassment of ever bringing up Rafer Alston and James Harden in the same conversation. Never do it again.
All right. Never to be done again. Now, still on this James Harden topic, though, it is mind-boggling to me how much hatred he really receives, not just from fans, but also from national media. What would you say to those who just simply can't appreciate the greatness that they're seeing in James Harden?
Oh, well.
That's it? Oh, well?
Yeah. I mean, what am I supposed to say? Because this is the hate's been going for him pretty strong for better part of 5 or 6 years, ever since he's been in the MVP conversation, really since he's become a Houston Rocket.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you can yell at the top of your lungs. You can demand the national media give him more respect. Does it really matter? No. James Harden plays at a certain level. He's going to have mannerisms at a certain level. He's going to be to the media a certain level. He's been remarkably consistent. So if you're looking for bright, smiley, huge interchange between media and James, it's not going to happen. He's not going to sign autographs on many occasions before games. He's not going to take pictures. He'll hand the shoes off like he did in Memphis, which was a very cool thing. I'm not saying he's void of that. But largely, James Harden this time of year is all business. And I don't know if media appreciates that. And again, at the end of the day, who cares? If he's helping the Rockets with all these injuries win 10 out of every 13 games, I could care less what anybody from the Athletic or SI or the West Coast of ESPN or the New York writers happen to think about him. He's playing at a very, very high level, and I don't think that spending time watching him in one game for 30 minutes and saying, I couldn't bother to be watch that kind of basketball. It's ugly. It's hard to watch. If you're a Rocket fan and he's dropping 48 points, 44 points, 40 points a night, how could you not love it when he's just taking the souls away from his opponents?
And welcome back into Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am here with Matt Thomas, one of the many voices of the Houston Rockets. And now, Matt, my next question for you. Mike D'Antoni has had some criticism throughout his years here in Houston, and a couple of those criticisms tend to be, you know, his reluctance, we'll say, to call timeouts during some critical stretches during games, and at other times, the shortened rotations that he likes to run, even with a seemingly healthy roster. Now, right now, with the number of injuries that the Rockets are facing, it's understandable that you're running an 8- or 9-man rotation, because that's really all you have available to you. But at the start of the season, when you've got your full 12 guys healthy, ready to go to the end of the bench, what would you say about Mike D'Antoni's rotations thus far and just overall his coaching ability?
Well, I'm a big Mike D'Antoni fan, personally and on the court. We've had these conversations about, you know, why do guys play a certain number of minutes? And his answer largely to that is because they're built that way. James Harden is not built to play 30 minutes in an NBA basketball game. He's built to play between 36 and 41 minutes. That's just who he is. Everything, I think, from an analytical standpoint is measured and documented. So I don't know how much of his rotations is gut and how much of it is the analytics say this. Austin Rivers needs to play 19 minutes a game. You can't play Tyson Chandler more than 24 minutes. You know, Eric Gordon is going to be better as a starter as compared to a reserve or vice versa, whatever the case may be. I think today it's less about the feel and more about the analytics. And I think that's the thing that people don't tend to understand is the Rockets have this pretty much measured out every single night and that there's very little on-the-fly decision-making. When to let Russ go sit down? When for James, when he wants to rest, when he wants to play? At what point of the game? So I don't find the criticism to be fair because some of it is out of his hands because the organization has figured out when to put these guys in the best position to win, and that's very much data-driven. And so that's the reason why at this point I can't be really overly critical of that. The only thing that really ever changes that is either because of injuries or because of foul trouble, and that really hasn't been a big part of it. But on a rotation situation like the Rockets are going through right now, there's no other way to do it because you have nobody else to go to.
Yeah, you've
that's
got
why
to run
Russ is going to play heavy minutes, and that's why James is playing heavy minutes.
And then from a stylistic standpoint, the past couple years with Chris Paul, this team has played at a bit of a slower, more methodical pace, and that kind of lends itself to the strengths of James Harden and Chris Paul's ability to work the ball in the half-court set to slow things down, to get the looks that they want, to get the switches that they are hunting for every offensive possession down the court. But now you add Russell Westbrook, and it seems stylistically this team has drastically altered themselves and are playing at a much higher pace. What do you like and or dislike about this higher pace?
I think taking more shots is a good thing. This Rocket team, Jackson, will never be considered a high percentage. It's about high volume. So if you can just get up more shots, just by nature, you're going to be a better team. You're going to be a team that's going to score more points. The one thing they got to do, and they've done a much better job the last three or four games, is take care of the basketball. Don't give the other team extra possessions. You add that with the fact that James is starting to come back to the norm. Austin Rivers is starting to come back to the norm. What you're getting right now out of Ben McLemore is probably above what he normally has done as an NBA player, and it all seems to work out. I think the Rockets want to play at this pace because they think at the end of the day that everybody plays at this pace. They think they can just do it better, and they have been. They have been revolutionary in terms of pace of play 3 or 4 years ago, and now everybody else is playing like that, so what they have to do? Take their game to the next level. Case in point, Minnesota was never like a team that we saw on Saturday night with the way they were shooting threes and moving the ball around. So guess what? You got to do it better than they do, and that's what they did Saturday, and that's why they were able to win the game by 20 points.
Do you think there comes a point where there's diminishing returns on continuing to try and, we'll just say, jack up as many threes as possible? Because with the rest of the NBA trending that same direction, Is there a point where maybe the rest of the NBA does finally catch up? Because like you said, Mike D'Antoni has always been at the forefront of this revolution. The higher, the faster paced offense. Yeah. He started it in Phoenix, the 7 seconds or less Suns. But now it seems that the rest of the NBA is catching on. They're understanding the math. Three is greater than two. We like to voice it all the time here in Houston. Do you think there's a chance where the NBA, the rest of the NBA, catches up and the Rockets lose that competitive advantage that they've had for years with the numbers backing them?
Well, what would be plan B then? If you all of a sudden said what you just said and I came to you and said, you're right, they should slow it down, then what would they want to do then? I don't think you can use Clint Capela any more than what you are offensively. P.J. Tucker's going to do a nice job for you, but he's only going to be a guy that's going to shoot the ball 5 to 7 times per game. Mm-hmm. You're going to go ask one of the most dominant offensive players in the last 25 years to change who he is? Speaking of James, not going to happen. You're going to ask Russell Westbrook, whose speed and his ability to get in the front court and win the transition game to slow his pace down? I'm not in for that.
Okay, fair points there. Now, as we're at this point in the season, 13 games in, we've seen James Harden and Russell Westbrook combine across 11 games because Russ has already sat out a pair due to the, we'll not call it load management, but the injury, I guess, safety net of him. You know,
well, you know, the Rockets don't use load management ever because James doesn't do it, but it's close as you get to it with Russ, and it's a smart decision because Russ wants to make a long playoff run. Russ, hopefully, big picture, when James starts to tire out or perhaps the numbers drop in the playoffs, which they unfortunately have just because I think the competition is better and it's a long grinding season, these days will pay off. I'd love for James to miss a game a month or so just to kind of give him a little bit of a, you know, relaxing, you know, keep the miles.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, it's two less miles when he plays. Not built that way. And I'm not going to tell a guy that has finished in the MVP voting 3 times, second place, first once, you know, change who you are. He's not going to do that. That's his personality. That's his demeanor. And here's a guy that after the Rockets play a back-to-back in Minnesota after the night before in Indiana, he's on a bike running and doing exercises to maintain endurance. He's very, very focused. And say what you will about whether or not you like his style of play, he grinds. That mid-range jumper we were talking about earlier is because he practices it 100 times. The dribble, 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 step back, dagger three, he practices it hundreds and hundreds of times. So he feels like, you know what? I do all this prep. I deserve the positive feedback of making these shots, making these baskets, and terrorizing opponents, and that's what he's done so far.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm glad you brought it up because when Jonathan Fagan tweeted that James Harden was in the workout locker room, whatever, you know, doing bicep curls or whatever it may have been, I was awestruck. That is just James Harden's greatness, his work ethic speaking for itself. And I tweeted out, I said, greatness never sleeps. James Harden is constantly working. He's constantly
looking to get better.
He's an alpha dog.
Yeah. Now, he may not be an alpha dog personally, but professionally as a basketball player, he's driven. And I love that because there are too many guys in the NBA that may be driven, but when given an opportunity to have a couple of days off, they'll take advantage of it. He doesn't want to do that. I don't know if he ever sleeps, honestly. I think he is driven in everything in his life, from his personal stuff that he does, whatever that may be, to the time he spends working on the game of basketball. And you see it. That's why he became, from a very effective sixth man, to maybe the most, one of the two most unstoppable players right now in the NBA.
And then before we get you out of here, I did have one final question, and it's less about to do with what happens necessarily exactly on the basketball court, but we had this, there was an article that came out recently, and I say recently, it was probably in the past month or two, and I forget which national media conglomerate it came out of, but talking about the amount of sleep that these professional athletes get and how the travel actually plays such an important part on the wear and tear for these athletes throughout the season. You're part of the media, but you're this select part of the media that you do travel with the team.
I do.
And you essentially have the exact same schedule that they do as far as sleep, travel, coming to and from Houston, visiting other places. How would you say that impacts an athlete?
Every athlete's built differently. So I can't tell you that the way Tyson Chandler gets ready for a game and sleeps and prepares and relaxes is the same as James Harden. So I have to unfortunately give you an incomplete answer on that. I think everybody is different. I think some guys want to stay up until 5 o'clock in the morning in a city, get the straight 8 hours and be up. Some will take a few hours and then eat and then take another nap. Everybody is different. These guys are all veterans, though. They all have their routines. I will tell you this. We're all not out sightseeing most places. It's pretty much you could just insert player in a certain city, whether it's New York, Memphis, San Antonio, or Portland, the routine is the same. Work, eat, go to the arena, do a shoot around on their own, usually before the day, before the game on the game day, come back, take their rest. But largely, these guys have done it for so long that it may be an overrated aspect. And also, you got to remember, we also travel very, very well. We're not cramped up in a bunch of coach seats. We're in a very comfortable plane. We get to these very nice hotels with very nice beds. So they do, you know, travel is still difficult no matter what. But at least they're acclimated to it. They're in good conditions. And ultimately, they're pretty smart about how they treat their bodies. And that's the most important thing, is that if guys were not, and they were going out partying as soon as the game was over, you could probably tell it on the court.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for your time today, Matt. Is there anything you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Just listen to the Matt Thomas Show 12 to 3 on Sports Talk 790. Follow me on Twitter at SportsMT and continue to listen to Lock on Rockets.
All right, Matt. Thank you very much. Before we wrap up this segment, a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Use your basketball knowledge to prove that you have what it takes at MyBookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. You can use promo code LOCKEDONNBA and MyBookie will actually match 50% of your first deposit. If you're listening on the go and you can't use MyBookie right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. And welcome into the final segment right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. This final segment, we're going to go ahead and recap the Rockets-Blazers game from last night. Spoke with Matt in the first two segments, and we had that little interview before the game yesterday. And so now we'll talk about the game from last night, kind of break it down a little bit. This was the one game that the Rockets had against an opponent that was below 500 in this stretch of eight games against some otherwise really good teams. And the Blazers were still a good team in their own right, just because you have Damian Lillard, you have CJ McCollum. Either one of those guys can go off on any given night, where they can both go off together, and that is not what happened last night, in large part due to the Rockets' defense. They played those guys really well. McCollum did finish with, I think, 25 points. Yeah, 25 points on 10 of 19 shooting, 5 of 12 from behind the arc, so McCollum had himself a good night. Lillard, on the other hand, 13 points, just 4 of 15 shooting, 1 of 6 from behind the arc. He was 4 of 4 at the free throw line, and he was getting others involved. He had 11 assists. It was a minus 19 in 35 minutes. The Rockets did a phenomenal job of shutting him down, forcing other guys to take shots, and in general, just playing great defense on the Blazers. They shot just a hair under 42% from the floor, just 30% behind the arc as a team. So defensively, the Rockets are keeping this, they're sustaining this effort on the defensive side of the basketball. And I think that's been such an important part during this run, and the defensive contributions that you get from guys like Daniel House, PJ Tucker, Austin Rivers, the increased effort on defense from Harden and Westbrook, Capella being your anchor. And that was the big part about this game, is you get three of your guys back. Now, granted, we knew we were going to have Russell Westbrook back for this game. The only reason he sat out Saturday was for the, we won't call it load management, but he sat out for the preventative maintenance because of that off-season knee scope. So we know that's going to happen on one of every back-to-back. Russ is going to sit out for one of those two games. But we got Daniel House Jr. back, and we got Capella back. And those two guys came up pretty big. Capella finished the game 22 points, 20 rebounds, had four blocks. Four blocks was insane. That was another 20-rebound game, along with four blocks. That's the fourth time in a row that Capella's gotten over 20 rebounds, or at least 20 rebounds, 20 or more, in a game so far. And this is during that stretch of games where the Rockets were going to be facing some pretty top-tier talent. Having Capella soak in all those boards is huge. House comes back, finishes with 11 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 3 of 6 from behind the arc. He was a welcome sight to have from behind, because it feels like every time he shoots the ball, it's going in. And that's pretty much on the money with his season shooting percentage, because Daniel House is averaging, what is he shooting from three? 46% from behind the arc. So
it does kind of equate to, pretty much every time he pulls the trigger, it feels like the ball's going in. Having him back in your front court is great. PJ Tucker, 13 points, 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Had a couple of his little PJ floaters right there in the paint. Not many other stats for PJ that night, but... And we get to our dynamic duo. James Harden finishing with 36 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and a block. And Russell Westbrook with another triple-double logged on a Russell Westbrook bobblehead night at Toyota Center. 28 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 steals, and a block. 3 of 11 shooting from behind the arc. 9 of 26 overall was a bit painful. A woefully inefficient night for Westbrook. And we'll get into that a little bit more in just a second, but a quick tangent. Westbrook said in his post-game interview that he's never had a bobblehead before. And I find that so bizarre that a guy who was the number two in a franchise behind Kevin Durant and then who was the face of the franchise after Kevin Durant left never had a bobblehead. I have three different James Harden bobbleheads over on a shelf just to my left. That's three James Harden bobbleheads, and I'm pretty sure there's probably one or two more out there that I don't own. And James has been here, 8 years? Westbrook spent 10, 11 years in OKC, never got a single bobblehead? It's a little wild to me. For as much as that city loved that man, you'd think they would make him a bobblehead. There was also kind of a bit of a glaring gap tooth in the bobblehead that Westbrook took a bit of exception to. Not in the postgame interview, but overall, I'm happy that he got a bobblehead, happy that he logged another triple-double. His shooting, though, is a bit of a concern. Still taking a handful of those mid-range jumpers, but so far, even in games where Westbrook has an inefficient shooting night, it's not hurting the Rockets. It's not hurting them substantially. And at Stanford KP noted this on Twitter last night, that Westbrook, and I totally agree with this, based on the eye test, I agree. Westbrook gives you extra opportunities. I was talking to Ben about this in an elevator conversation late last week, not quite as eloquently, but Westbrook gives you extra opportunities through his hustle, through the increased pace that he plays at, through all the potential assists that he records. You are constantly getting more and more chances with Russell Westbrook. So looking at his mid-range jumpers as kind of a branch of those extra opportunities that you'd not necessarily have if you were still running Chris Paul and James Harden, you live with them because he's generating so many more looks off of just defensive rebounds, offensive rebounds, potential assists, getting guys open, creating shots that, yes, Chris Paul could create great wide open looks. He could run plays, but sometimes it would take the length of the shot clock to do it. Russ can just turn into a one-man fast break and get down the length of the court in 3 or 4 seconds and generate a wide open three-point shot for somebody in a Rockets uniform. So if Russ does that in 3 to 4 seconds and does that 5 or 6 times a game versus Chris Paul, who could, Chris could run a set play to a T and get a clean look at the end of set play. Takes up a whole shot clock that's 24 seconds. Whereas, again, you got Westbrook who can be a one-man fast break and generate a great look within 3 to 5 seconds. So you're getting more chances at the basket with Russell Westbrook. Now, yes, the mid-range shots from him are not ideal, but we've seen in at least one game so far, the New Orleans Pelicans game, where Westbrook can shoot a respectable percentage from there. When he gets it rolling, when he sees the ball go in a few times, he's like any shooter. He'll just start to feel himself and then keep going. Hopefully he does work them out of his game a little bit. But overall, the increased opportunities that he gives you matches what this team wants to do. Sorry, there goes my phone. It matches what this team wants to do in the sense that this team, and actually Matt said it earlier in the podcast when we were sitting down for our interview before the game, this team is never going to be a good three-point shooting team. or a phenomenal lights-out three-point shooting team. This team relies on three-point volume. And having Russ gets you more volume from distance. Having Russ generates more opportunities for your shooters to then get their shots up. As a team, the Rockets shot 17 of 45 for 37.8%. It's pretty good. That's a pretty solid average. If they're shooting that every game, and Harden's getting his 30 and getting his 5 and 5 rebounds and assists, more or less, Westbrook's getting 20-plus points, 13 boards, 10 assists, whatever it may be, just averaging his 20-plus point triple-double, essentially, and Capella's pulling down his own double-double. Doesn't even have to be a 20-20 game like he's been averaging these last four, but just if Capella's pulling his weight and the role players are hitting their shots, that's a perfect recipe to win. That's all you really need. And to think that they're able to do this right now without Eric Gordon, who will be coming back and taking away minutes from Isaiah Hartenstein and Chris Clemens, maybe not even Isaiah Hartenstein. But overall, this Rockets team played a really great game of basketball. We saw a few of the things that I mentioned at the end of the last pod, where Mike D'Antoni did go back to Isaiah Hartenstein and Chris Clemens during regular playing time. He gave Cephalosha and Chandler a rest that night, or last night, I should say. So he didn't worry so much about getting those guys into the rotation. He played the younger guys, and they were, we'll say they weren't bad in their collective minutes played. Hartenstein got 13 minutes, finished with 9 points, only was able to secure 1 rebound, though. He did get a pair of blocks. He was 3 of 3 from the charity stripe, so some good minutes from Hartenstein. Clemens had 6 points, an assist and a block, shot 2 of 4 from behind the arc, 2 of 5 overall. I want to say, though, that those 2 threes that he hit must have been in garbage time, unless I'm just misremembering, but I don't remember him actually hitting any shots during meaningful playing time. But it's fine, because we know that he's capable of doing that. So Mike D'Antoni having faith in Hartenstein and Clemens to give them even just 10 minutes a night to kind of reduce the wear and tear on some of the other guys is huge. Because as dominant as the starting lineup is, it's still early in the season, and you still want to keep those guys fresh come playoff time, because this is a team that's planning to make a deep run. So knowing that you've got those guys and being able to mix in some of that youth and some of that energy around your veteran players is awesome. And once you have Eric Gordon back mid-December or end of December, wherever it may be, whatever the return timetable is on him, I just hope that Mike D'Antoni remembers that he's got those guys at his disposal. Rivers, again, played great defense. His three-point shot has seemingly disappeared. I want to say he's 1 for 12 in the last 3 games, something like that. Just 5 points, handful of rebounds, couple steals, though. Again, great defense. That is his constant. That's what he constantly brings to the table. He may or may not have his shot on any given night, but I don't think you rely on Austin Rivers as a shooter necessarily. There's usually other shooters on the court with him. So especially when they get Eric Gordon back, Eric Gordon will be taking the minutes that Austin Rivers essentially has right now, because Austin's pretty much that second guard next to Harden or Westbrook when the other sits, and that's not ideally his role within this team, because you don't want him to be your volume three-point shooter off the bench like Eric Gordon is, but right now he's kind of slotted into that role. Ben McLemore, 0-5 from last night, 1-8 overall. Really rough night for McLemore, although he did get 6 rebounds, had a couple of assists, so he's finding ways to contribute even though his shot isn't falling. But guys like McLemore and Rivers need to at least shoot a somewhat respectable percentage from behind the arc. You can have one bad three-point shooter in this system that relies so much on three-point shooting in Russell Westbrook. You can't have 2 or 3 or 4 bad three-point shooters. We have to rely on the role players to at least shoot a respectable percentage, because they will get those wide-open looks. 1 of 9 combined from Rivers and McLemore is a pretty rough shooting game. To be fair, you have Russell Westbrook, 3 of 11. But PJ Tucker, 3 of 4. House, 3 of 6. Great numbers there. Harden, 5 of 10. Those are your great shooters. And then when you get Eric Gordon back, he falls into that same category as the aforementioned trio right there, where you want Eric Gordon taking a lot of threes. Not necessarily because he's a great three-point shooter, but he shoots at such a volume that he's going to stick a few. Ideally, out of 10 three-point shots, Eric will hit 3, maybe 4 of them, 5 or 6 on a really hot night. But he's one of those guys that can get hot in a hurry. So again, getting him back in December will be critical for this team. In addition to playing the young guys, which is something we spoke about at the end of the last pod, we also saw in this game that, one, obviously the defense has continued. That trend, whatever kickstarted it, whether it was the actual loss to the Miami Heat, whether it was the Rockets Twitter watch party that we had, and that just, instead of cursing them with a loss like we thought it did, I mean, it did curse them with a loss maybe, but that loss maybe jump-started the defensive intensity that we're seeing on this 8-game win streak. But overall, the defense is there, the hustle, the energy, all of that is there, and that's what Mike D'Antoni was asking for, that's what we were asking for as fans, is just a good faith effort on defense, and we're seeing that night in and night out throughout this win streak, and hopefully this trend continues. Now the other one was Russell Westbrook handling the ball a bit more when James Harden was in the game. Now, that's not to take away shots from James, but just for him to handle the ball a bit more, simply because, and I said it in the last pod, when James handles the ball with Russ in the game, Russ's defender does not have to worry about Russ shooting threes. Russ's defender can sag in and can really clog things up for James trying to head to the basket. In this game, we saw Russ handling the ball quite a bit while James is in the game, with the most iconic moment, and I noted this on Twitter, so you can go find it. There's a play where Russ gets the defensive board near the end of the third quarter, and the basket mic picks up James Harden saying, "Go Russ." You just hear, "Go Russ," and Russ turns on the absolute jets. He just makes it down the length of the court in 3 or 4 seconds, just absolutely blasts off, scores the bucket. Nobody's even with him. He beats all 5 Blazers back by himself. And then we see Russ go on this continued tear during his set of minutes, end of the third, beginning of the fourth, before he takes his final rest. And it was really a sight to see where, when he decides to, Russ can get to the basket at will. Which is why it's frustrating to see him shoot mid-range jumpers, because we know he has the explosiveness and the athleticism to really get to the basket at will. So seeing him settle for mid-range jumpers or turnaround fadeaways or bank shots 15 feet away from the basket, it's not great, because again, we know that he can get to the basket whenever he wants to. And he says it in the post-game interview with Kaylee. He said, "The only person that can stop me is me. It's about me. It's about my decision-making." I'm paraphrasing here. But he essentially says it's all about him and it's about his decision-making. And that's true. And Russ hopefully will fine-tune his decision-making and start to minimize those mid-range shots. I'm okay with roughly every single three-pointer that he took last night, because for the most part, they were all wide-open looks. The mid-range shots are always pretty much going to be contested, because he's either going to shoot them with a hand in his face after his quick little stutter step dribble, or he's going to shoot them falling away in the paint after posting up a smaller guard. The three-point shots he took, though, pretty much every single one wide open, and that's because defenders give him so much space at the three-point line. They're not hugging him like they are James Harden, because you don't have to do that with Russ, because he's not a great three-point shooter. But the handful that he hit were great. 3 of 11, not a phenomenal percentage, but from Russ, we'll take it. And in a win like this, we'll take it. Because again, he generates so many extra looks, so many extra opportunities for your team, that you run with whatever he gives you. Because it hasn't been a detriment yet. Russ's inefficiency has not hurt your team yet. And as they sit at 11-3, you'll take whatever you can get from him. And this is really probably the first game since that road win against the Pelicans where we've seen a great game from Harden and a great game from Russ, and then you pile that on with another 20-20 game from Clint, great contributions from all the role players from the bench. That's why they're winning so handily against this Trailblazers squad, which their record really doesn't portray how good they are as a team. They have had a rough start, but they've got a lot of talent on that roster. So again, there are no free wins, especially in the Western Conference. Pretty much every team in the West is capable of grinding out a win on any given night, even some of the more bottom-tier teams. But to have that final 132-108, to have a dominant second half, dominant second quarter too. That second quarter was really what started to separate the game. You go 30-29 in Portland's favor in the first, then 35-20 in favor of Houston in the second, going to halftime with a 14-point lead. 35-26 in the third, and then 33-32 in the fourth, but that's where you got the garbage time play. So that fourth quarter doesn't matter so much, but the Rockets are now across this 8-game win streak. So immediately after the Miami Heat game, they rank now second in offensive rating and second in defensive rating throughout that win streak, which is huge. It's just the Bucks ahead of them in defensive rating by a couple points, 98.2. Rockets are at 100.1. And then it's just the Wizards ahead of them in offensive rating. They're sitting comfortably at 115. The Rockets are at 113.9. So throughout this 8-game win streak, they have been dominant. And that is a welcome sight with a couple of really big tests coming up here in just a couple days. They play Denver in Denver this Wednesday. And then they play the Clippers, who will ideally be at full strength and give us a real preview of what may very well be a Western Conference semifinals or even a Western Conference finals matchup. Play the Clippers in LA with hopefully the healthy Kawhi Leonard. Paul George is back playing some solid basketball. So that'll be another great test. And then they wrap that up with Sunday against Dallas and then Wednesday against the Heat just before Thanksgiving. So they've gone 4-0 so far in this tough stretch of games. If they can continue this win streak, if they can go 4-0 again against those four teams, that will be a huge statement. Because then you wrap it up with Atlanta, which again, Atlanta's no slouch. Trae Young can go off. But if you wrap it up with a 4-0 against those four teams and then secure a win against Atlanta, that puts you at 16-3 going into the month of December. That is a ridiculously good record. And when every win counts this early in the season, it's exactly what you got to do. I think they're capable of doing it. I think the Clippers are the hardest team to beat in that lineup. I think the Rockets have Denver's number, so I'm not so much worried about that matchup. And it'll remain to be seen how well Dallas can actually defend or how well KP can defend the Harden-Capella pick and roll. They're going to hunt for switches all game against KP and against Luka. So we'll see how that goes. Miami, I'm a bit worried about. Miami, still a solid team, still defending relatively well, and offensively, they're a decent team. They're probably not going to be as lethal as we saw in the first outing against the Heat because we won't have the South Beach curse hanging over the head of Harden and Westbrook and the rest of the squad. But that's another team where you just have to respect what they're able to do and make sure you secure that win. Now for this Tuesday morning, November 19th episode, this is where we break things. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin. Matt is on there, of course, at SportsMT. And the show is on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, of course, LockedOnRockets.com. And our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show. You can place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out and let us know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Again, for this Tuesday morning, November 19th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.